Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz underscore radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Great to have you in on Wednesday. It's Hail Varsity Radio presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, the pride of Chicago, is Danny Burke. Very soon we'll have all Big Ten first team offensive selections, all Big Ten second team, third team, and that freshman of the year, Rondale Moore, Adrian Martinez. I know where your vote's at. Welcome to join us. 466-3776, 466-3776, 800-825-5865. Numbers to get in. You can email Chris at HailVarsity.com. And for sure, give us a follow on Twitter, at Schmidt underscore radio, at Danny Burke 5, or at Hail Varsity. We're open till about 4:40 today, so open phones can jump in with us. We'll get into the college football playoff. We'll get into all Big Ten selection. We'll dive into some Huskers that can, will, slash need to step up in 2019 on the defensive side of the ball. And we'll be full up in hour two. Brad Edwards, ESPN Insider, College Game Day. He is so good at research, analysis, and opinion. Every week for us on Hail Varsity, we'll get Brad's take on the conference championship games and where the playoff is at. Derek Peterson, Dr. Petey of Hail Varsity, he'll weigh in on the Big Ten selections, some Husker hoops. You have Dwayne Haskins named the Graham George Offensive Player of the Year and the Greasy Quarterback of the Year. So they have not released first team, but there's your first team quarterback. Shuey is supposed to be in. Mike Shuhart, we'll talk a little Tiger Phil with him. I lasted till about the 19th, and then I fell asleep on Jay Bird's couch. We'll just leave it there. Do the math, post-Iowa, golf, wet bar. Did you fall asleep or did you pass out again? One of the best lines ever in Billy Madison. Okay, let's dive into some Huskers in 2019. I got to get your take here, Danny. How optimistic are you about that defense kind of rising up, being better, and being something that is more steady, is more reliable? I think they'll be okay. I think there's some guys on the defensive line that'll be good, that will go out with a bang, so to speak. I'm thinking the Davis twins. I'm thinking that second level, that linebacker spot is unknown aside from Mo Berry, right? But you're feeling pretty good about. And from a secondary standpoint, listen, you have Lamar and you have DeCap that are pretty talented, but there's some other guys in there. I think the defense can make strides. The offense jumped 50-some spots, and they finished as a top 30 offense. We can get into the offensive conversation as well. Life without Stanley, life without Divino Zigbo. But you got Adrian and you got JD. So defensively, man, I think that's, you know, kind of what you have and the emphasis on the offense for Nebraska football. But defensively is where they got to make strides.
Yeah, absolutely. And you kind of saw the increase in the defense as the season went on. Of course, a little bit tougher for this defense on the road. You saw him struggle a little bit with Iowa. Could not stop that run game. You could just hand it off to the right continuously, and Nebraska was struggling with it. Honestly surprised Iowa didn't keep at it the whole game. But that's got to be the main thing. That's been the main thing for Nebraska as long as I can remember, and from what you've told me, as long as it's ever been, just Nebraska trying to stop that inside handoff and just really just be powerful in that line.
It's not been consistent. It's stopping the run.
Right. And that's what the issue is. I mean, the secondary improved. They were suspect heading into the year. I would say that they improved a lot as the year progressed. It's just that run game, and that's going to be how Nebraska can compete defensively in the Big Ten, and they're going to have to do that. And yeah, I mean, they'll get another year under this system. They'll understand it more, and they'll also get in that weight program with Duvall another year, or offseason rather, of that. Mm-hmm. They'll be tougher, stronger, learn it better, and they should improve.
I think they'll get better, and I'm just going to throw some names out there, okay? And it's all three levels of the defense, and this is what kind of sucks about this time of year. A year ago, we're talking coaching search. We're waiting for Frost to say yes and move to Lincoln. Now, the reality is it's offseason. I know there's an early signing period. Greg Smith's going to rock and roll a recruiting hit for us tomorrow as we get closer to the weekend. Coaches have been out all week. That's one, God, if you're going to go silver lining, that's one silver lining, isn't it, that, okay, there's no bowl game or conference title game to prepare for, so you can get in some living rooms, my friends. Listen, you got to accentuate the positive. There it is. Offensively, Nebraska and this staff are going to have a lot to sell, man. There is a lot of things you can kind of fixate on that wow you if you're a dude and a skill guy. Rondale Moore specifically Robinson is who I'm thinking of. One of the key guys that maybe they flip. There's another offensive guy on the line that Nebraska is going to try and flip, and we'll spend some time with that. We'll have an update on Jeff Brohm as well. Is he going to Louisville? Is he staying at Purdue? There's no word yet. I know he had contact per reports with the Louisville athletic director. If he exits stage left to go back home, then Purdue goes back down to, you know, somebody that's fighting Illinois for last place. As it is, he's 13-12 in 2 years there, and he's beaten Ohio State, and he's 2-0 against Nebraska. Oh, excuse me, 1-1 against Nebraska. Back to Nebraska for a second. Okay, in the safety spots, you've got some guys, right? You're losing Aaron Williams. You're losing Trey Neal. Just tremendous. Then you're losing Antonio Reed. And Antonio Reed finished pretty strong despite 4th-and-8. Guy that was kind of a splash player. You got Deontay Williams. It's a freaking athlete. I mean, a guy that just made plays, needs to know what's going on. Markell Dismuke. He's a guy that's been in the program for a long time and is an athlete, is a very vicious dude that can stick his head in there. He's not afraid to make plays. He just needs to get comfortable. You've got C.J. Smith and Cam Jones, both safeties that didn't see time this year due to injury. So those are part of last year's recruiting class that I'm interested. So there's four safeties there. You're going to need some depth. That's where we're starting at safety, and I'm sure Nebraska's in on a couple this year. The Davis twins got to be going from consistent, and they're all Big Ten honorable mention yesterday, coaches and media, to those splash players, to those guys that can stop the run. But to me, like, the number one guy that I need to see make a jump, we just started the show off talking about run game. I've got to see Damian Daniels be able to play more snaps. Big old 93, double D. He is a talent. He is someone that doesn't get moved off his spot. He clogs the middle. He is quick. And when he was in against Iowa, Iowa's running game wasn't 5 a carry. I mean, there was actually some penetration by the linebackers. Damian Daniels, I'm going to start on the line. This is a line of scrimmage league. He's the number one guy on defense. I need to see make a giant jump. Strength and conditioning, we know he's strong. We know he's fast. We know he's talented. We know he's gifted because dude's his size with his feet, with his leverage. Don't grow on trees. He's a guy that needs to spend a lot of time with Zach Duvall and Zach Duvall's guys, so he's in better game shape. And to Damian's credit, guys that are that big, that strong, that physical, it is hard. It is hard duty. I mean, big dudes on the offense or defensive line, nobody likes running, nobody likes getting in shape. And for the first time in probably a long time, Damian's been in the best shape of his life. There's still a higher bar to get to. I think Nebraska's strength and conditioning, that'll be a big win for Nebraska if Damian can move in at that nose spot and give you 40 snaps, give you more than the 20 that he was able to give you, period. He's my number one guy. You can go down the list, and I know Mo's coming back, and you got your corners that are back, and I know that they need a splash Shaquem Griffin-type dude off the edge. I know all of that, but I'm talking – meat and potatoes right now. Stop the run in the Big Ten against Wisconsin. Stop the run against Iowa. Shut down Ohio State. Don't get gashed for six a carry right up the gut. Damian Daniels is my guy.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the defensive line is where you need to make the biggest jump, so I'll step a little bit away from that. I think the guy who's really got to prove himself is Lamar Jackson.
Okay.
I think
you want to see more than what you want to see more of the last four, right?
Exactly. And I mean, he was on our show. He talked about going to the NFL potentially, but he told us that he'd be coming back most likely. I was even surprised to hear him consider going to the NFL this
year.
Since
he got here, he's had people at his ear saying, you're out after 3 years. Mm-hmm. It's all you, Lamar. He has had the wrong people telling him how great he is for a long time. And he can be great.
Right. And that's why I want to see him make that jump. And if he has that in his mind that he should maybe be going to the draft this year, he's got so much more to live up to in his ceiling. He's always had so much potential here, and I think he's just started to crack into it this year. Exactly. And we're seeing what his athletic ability can be and how well he can cover guys. So I think this year was like, all right, this is the type of ball player we have on this team. Next year, he should be a leader for that secondary group. He needs to get more deflections, more picks, bigger hits. Don't get beat, and I just think he needs to step up the most, especially for that secondary.
He could be your lockdown. He really covered well. I know Iowa had a couple completions on him, but it wasn't for lack of coverage. They were just like the two throws Stanley made all day were nuts. I mean, they were two really good throws. Lamar did a really good job of, roll tape on this, playing physical and making tackles. His missed tackles went down a ton, and he made hits. Mm-hmm. And I mean, the light went on that Ohio State game. And guess what? That's a showcase against a lot of NFL dudes, so he's going to play his ass off. But it needs to be a consistency thing, right? Because that's what the NFL's looking at. I mean, listen, man, and I haven't given a phone call to my NFL peeps, right? But if Lamar Jackson puts his name in to be evaluated for the NFL draft, that can happen between now and the decision date. I think is that Monday after New Year's Day. I think the second week of January is when you have to either stay in or opt out. Clearly, you can't sign with an agent. So I think he'll do that. I don't know if I don't know who he's going to listen to. Okay, I don't know who he's going to listen to. He told us, "Yeah, I'll probably be back." He in the same interview said, "I mean, I'm so close to my dream." So I get it, but is he going to listen to? Say he comes back, and you may Google like NFL draft projections here. I just don't see him going as a first day guy. I'm not saying at some point in his life he can't have that type of talent. Because you look how big, strong, and fast he is. It's kind of always been about him getting his mind right and playing like you know he can play. Like, every game for him should be like the Ohio State game. He is that physically gifted. But I will say this. It's not going to be Coach Fisher telling him, bro, you need to stay out of selfishness. It's, bro, you need to stay because I can get you to a level you've never been before. From a consistency and a dominance standpoint, you have that. And I think Nebraska has that from a coaching standpoint. I think Frost and Shenander, and I really think Fisher, those guys are going to be straight. They want what's best for the kid 1,000% over and over and over. It's who's out on the West Coast saying, Lamar, you need to go jump. Who's out from a former 7-on-7 or former coach standpoint that is advising him? What dude that wants to make 2% off of him is advising him? The easy route is to say, screw it, I'm out. I'm declaring for the NFL draft. And if the draft grade comes back and says you're a first or second rounder, then go. But I don't think it's going to come back. You have not put enough out there. He'll get drafted. It's kind of like Ndamukong Suh, okay? Suh was good enough on projected ability to be a fourth or fifth rounder. The guy had played 2 years at Lincoln and redshirted, okay? and he could have left after the 07 season and been a fourth or fifth round pick. That's what our draft guy, Russ Landy, told me. Because of, I mean, the guy's great. It's never just been brought out of him, his greatness. I look at Lamar as the same type of dude that's got the ability. We got into Lamar here. We're talking about guys who need to step up in 2019. But this is kind of a fascinating discussion. I mean, you can wait like Sue did, even after his junior year. He wanted to go first. The Pelini said, dude, you're going to be a first-round pick. But come on back and be a top two pick. And he's had a really awesome career when he's wanted to crank it up.
Yeah, I'm looking at a site right now, and if he was going into the 2019 draft, they have him sixth round, the free agent. 28th best cornerback in the draft.
Okay. You come back, you do a senior year. You've had to learn the corner spot.
Mm-hmm.
And man, you're getting coached. You're doing it the right way. You're kind of embracing the grind. It's all good. We'll get more into some guys in 2019 that need to step up for Nebraska football. Think of that defense flipped around. Thoughts on all Big Ten offensive selection. That will be out shortly. Hail Varsity continues. Can join us 466-3776.
Miss us?
Come here, brother. Give me a hug. Bring it in for the real thing.
We're on call for you. Catch the podcast at HailVarsity.com, the ESPN Lincoln app, or download them on iTunes.
Saddle up, partner.
Back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Great to have you back. Hail Varsity Radio presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt and the Pride of Chicago is Danny Burke. I love ultimatums from co-workers. Derek Peterson, Dr. Petey's supposed to be with us in an hour, but he says we have to talk to him about his Thunder. And I sent him a gift back that just had the most annoyed Kevin Durant. And there's a lot of sourpuss faces out there in social media and gifts to choose from of Kevin Durant acting like a spoiled, petulant two-year-old. And I sent one because there's no ultimatums here.
I need the Thunder to hit the over tonight. So
of course you do.
We could talk about it with him.
You know what? And we'll, listen, here's what's going to happen with football. Football will never clearly go away, but football can go away for a little bit. There's other sports to talk about. Nebraska basketball. We'll get into that with Dr. Petey. We'll, I don't know if we like broach the Baker Mayfield drama with him, if we would get to Nebraska sports at all.
We at least got to hit some Oklahoma.
No, I know.
Oklahoma / Baker, one of either of those.
We are awaiting word on all Big Ten selection. We're talking about 2019. Who is key for Nebraska defensively in 2019? Who needs to step up? And that's what we're kind of rapping about. We got onto Lamar Jackson, if he'll declare. I think he'll think about it, and I think he'll be back. Listen, what do I know? I mean, Nebraska benched him. He got to be playing at a super high level. He's graded out extremely well, and right now he's a sixth round to a free agent. But what's Lamar hearing? Who's he going to listen to? That's my biggest question. Because if he listens to his coaching staff and if he has written confirmation from the NFL Draft Advisory Board that says, dude, you are a very talented young man, you're a sixth-round pick. Is he going to believe? Is he going to hear what he wants to hear? And for a long time, he has heard what he wants to hear a lot. And he is gifted. He is good. But that's fair. You said Lamar Jackson's who you think can step up for 2019 to really kind of revamp this defense. I think Damian Daniels is extremely key, so Iowa's not going for five a carry. I think the Davis twins are there still. He's good. Let's talk linebackers for a second. And you know what you got in Mo Berry? I think Mo Berry's obviously your emotional leader. Mo Berry's the first guy at linebacker for Nebraska to have 100 tackles since Levante David. That's a freaking statement. I know Levante's been in the NFL for a while, but Nebraska's just not had guys land on all conference teams, hence their record as you get further away from the Amir year in 2014, or guys like Searles and Spencer Long, first and second team on the offensive line, guys that are all conference caliber like Quincy Enunwa, Amir Abdullah, obviously, Taylor Martinez. Nebraska has some of those options now. Adrian Martinez will probably not end up on first, second, or third team, but he'll finish second likely in freshman of the year. He's a top six quarterback statistically. We can argue who you'd take over him. Haskins is your first team guy. He's your quarterback of the and your offensive player of the year. Defensively, in the secondary, Markell Dismuke, Deontay Williams, C.J. Smith, Cam Jones are your safety candidates, right? How about what we have seen? We saw the emergence of a healthy JoJo Doman as a splash player, guy that can get in there as your hybrid, as your coverage guy. Right now, you got JoJo Doman and Tyron Ferguson. Tyron Ferguson is a guy that made a lot of plays when he was healthy. He was top three in the team with tackles for loss with six, yet he missed four games with that high ankle sprain. Guy is great at setting the edge. He's wonderful at getting in. I mean, he made some plays against Iowa coming from the backside. Really talented. I like what Nebraska has at outside linebacker. When you got JoJo, you got Fergie. And then this is one of those young pups along with Cam Taylor that saw time that you hope can make a huge jump. Extremely young in their career. And you've had guys at Nebraska in the past that really flashed at a young, young age. And I'm going back a ways. And this isn't the obvious Tommy Frazier, Amon Green take, or even Lawrence Phillips. And Lawrence Phillips wowed folks as a freshman. But I'm talking defensively. You have a situation where guys like a Trev Alberts or a Mike Kroll or Jason Peter, a Grant Wistrom. I mean, guys that are just phenomenal. Played and didn't redshirt or played as a redshirt freshman. Right now, Big Ten Network is talking to Rondale Moore. Pretty safe to assume he is going to be named or has been named the freshman of the year. He'll be your first team all Big Ten wide receiver as well as he led the league in receiving. He is incredible. He's Tariq Hill without the baggage. He's big time. Other things defensively, Colin Miller was a guy that kind of flashed early. And I don't know how comfortable he was, but Colin Miller's very active, very athletic. I like what he can do. Rondale Moore named the Freshman of the Week four times this year. It's going to be a tight race between him and Adrian Martinez, I believe, for that award. Will Honus, how does he come back? So you're looking at this at your linebackers. You have Fergie and JoJo, and you have Moe, along with Caleb Tanner and Colin Miller and Will Honus. That's a good core right there. You can mix and match at corner. I don't know. What do you got? You got your two starters and then some other guys. 466-377-6466-3776-800-8255-865. Let's shift gears and talk a little bit about all-conference team selections. So where do you think Ziggy ends up? Does Divina Zigbo end up first, second, or third team? Ziggy has got a great place in many of our hearts because of his perseverance, how incredible he's been. And statistically speaking, Ziggy finished sixth in the league in rushing. Okay, Jonathan Taylor's your unanimous first team. He's incredible. Miles Sanders was second. Caron Higdon third. Scott out of Indiana was a really talented back. Maybe some of you saw. I'm not saying he's better than Divino Zigbo. I'm just saying if you're going based on yards, where they're at. And then you got Corbin out of Illinois that finished right ahead of Ziggy. I think based on that, I think from a media standpoint, you're going to have Ziggy finished third team. I would be surprised if some of the coaches didn't go second team with Ziggy. He'll finish somewhere second or third team. I think it's probably going to be Sanders and Hill, or excuse me, going to be Sanders and Taylor, or going to be Taylor and Higdon as your first team. Wideouts, Rondale Moore, and then who? The Stanley Morgan Jr. make first team. He finished third in the league, receiving behind Taylor Johnson of Minnesota. I didn't know Minnesota had a quarterback complete 1,000 yards worth of passes, but they did. So Rondale Moore, one. Taylor Johnson, two. Stanley comes in at three. JD comes in at six statistically. JD also had eight touchdowns. I think Spielman ends up split. I think Spielman ends up probably, I think the coaches may vote him second team. And I think the media will vote him third team. I think Stanley ends up split. I think he'll make first team all Big Ten on with the coaches. I think the media may put him second.
Yeah, I'm thinking Stanley will go first. JD, you say second?
You think he's unanimous?
Believe?
I think there's a collection of coaches out there that go, J.D. Spielman's a giant pain in the ass to deal with. And if I'm having to pick who I do not want to face, that's it. Mm-hmm. What could hurt Spielman?
His injury.
Not just his injury, but his finish. Right? I mean, from Ohio State on, didn't have the best game against Ohio State. I'm not hating. I'm just talking. Okay? I think he's fabulous. I think he's a great person. I think he's a tremendous player. But not one of his finer games,
mm-hmm.
right? Between the RPO, he's kind of the two to tango part of that equation, and then the
drop pass.
The drop. I mean, changes the game.
Absolutely.
And then he got dinged, and you didn't see him against Iowa. I thought he was. Did he even play against Iowa?
I don't think so.
I thought he was in on the edge making a block. That might have been Mike Williams on the touchdown that Stoll got into the end zone on. Anywho. I think Spielman is a guy that's going to come back with a vengeance, and be even thicker and stronger.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So there you are. I think you're going to have two wideouts for Nebraska. Hymus, does he make a third team at left tackle? True sophomore.
That'd be tough. I don't know. I mean,
I think he'll totally get honorable mention.
Yeah, I would say that. I don't know about third team though. No. I don't know right now if I'm confident in saying that. I mean, Nebraska's offensive line altogether, they're just one of those groups that started off a little bit slow. Well, I mean, against Colorado, they were fine. Then they kind of regressed. They were going back and forth. And then they ended strong. So I think it's going to be one of those honorable mention things.
I think their offensive line played really well against Ohio State. I mean, Iowa had a little fun with them.
Mm-hmm.
They gutted it out against Sparty, right? And then Wisconsin was just a little bit over. Different Wisconsin team.
Yeah.
When Nebraska got them. The other thing to think about, too, is when we're talking first team, is there some KJ Hill, Paris Campbell love?
Yeah, I was
going
to say Paris Campbell's got to be in that consideration.
Does he bump Stanley for first team? I don't know. Your chance to qualify coming up for the holiday. Hail Mary, listen for that sounder. What you get? You'll win a laptop, and you'll win a $100 gift card to Jet Splash, a $100 gift card to Misty's, and some coffee. That collection of coffee that, you know what, get me that wake-up juice. It's pretty good stuff. That, when you hear the sounder. Also, don't forget, get apped up with the ESPN Lincoln app. Your chance when you download the app to win and sign up and qualify for $2,500. Just for signing up, you can listen to Hail Varsity, can listen to Greg Ethan Hooks, and can get all the breaking Husker news you want and need, and it don't cost you nothing. Pretty awesome. Simple to do for you on Google or on iTunes, the ESPN Lincoln app. He is pacing out in the hallway, waiting for those first team, second team, third team, Big Ten lists to come out. Mike Shewhart's on the way with Hail Varsity, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Back with you, it's Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Brad Edwards coming up in 25 minutes, a little playoff talk. As Danny, how's your email working? I fed the squirrels in back that are running in circles on that, the old ESPN Sports Center commercial where they lock Lance Armstrong in the basement to keep the power going. That's what gets our wireless working here. So my phone's been jacked. Any first and second team announcement yet?
No, I've been refreshing Twitter, but I'll keep you updated if I see any.
We have Mike Shewhart in, golf legend, golf standout, Husker fan. Shuey, we're waiting patiently here for all Big Ten selections. Rondale Moore is going to rip it up. He is tough to take. I got to ask you, how was Thanksgiving, my friend?
It was good. It was really
good. How many times did you go back up?
No, oh, man.
To the buffet.
I don't think I want to tell. Three or four.
Okay.
What the heck? I went small.
You're like, don't portions. Judge me?
That's right.
Okay. What do you think of this? As a coach, you've coached at the Division I level for a long time, and you get tapped. Coaches selection, media selection. What's your take on it? With is it political a lot of times, or do you think it's well thought out?
Well, I think there's some political,
some red tape.
Yeah, there's a little red tape that goes along in
sure.
there. You know, no question about it. But for the most part, you know, guys and players that have great seasons usually are recognized mm-hmm. for it. You always have a situation where you have a, you know, you have a case for everybody on why and what you think they should be, and they got snubbed or they didn't get snubbed. But, you know, I would, you know, like you waiting to see, you know, because Martinez had such a fantastic year. But
is there a quarterback you would take over him?
No.
I mean, we're not being homers here, right? I mean, I can go down the list here. I've got, let's talk about the quarterbacks here for the Big Ten that'll likely be first team. I mean, you'll have Haskins because he's your player of the year offensively.
McSorley.
He's your quarterback of the year. Your Breeze, whatever the hell they named it.
Yeah.
Right? Breeze. How many other quarterbacks can we name out of the Big Ten? Breeze Brady.
That's about it.
Right. So when you look at quarterbacks, I mean, you've got McSorley. You've got Haskins.
Blau. They had a great year.
They're good. And then you have Shea Patterson of Michigan. Listen, I don't shut down Adrian over any of them.
No.
Adrian
man.
Outplayed Haskins.
Look at his numbers.
Shea was great, and that was a Michigan defensive day. McSorley was great, but clearly McSorley's better when he's got NFL talent around him.
Exactly.
And then Blau was great against Nebraska.
I mean, look at what Martinez did with who he has,
mm-hmm.
you know.
And he has some
Does he have
weapons.
NFL talent around him? He's got
yeah,
a few guys.
I'd say he does.
Does he have an NFL line behind him?
No.
In front of him?
No.
No.
And he doesn't have an NFL line that we know of yet standing on that sideline waiting to come in and get the ball back for him.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's I wouldn't take any one of those guys over him. I think he's so multidimensional in what he can do. He has such a presence, and he's only going to get better mm-hmm. as he gets older. I mean, he's only 18 years old. I mean, that's incredible.
I loved his running ability, and that showed out against Iowa. We haven't talked for a while. Take away from the Iowa contest, and then we'll get into some Nebraska basketball. Big one against Clemson, starting with Iowa.
It was very, very encouraging watching them, you know, especially the way the game was going and how it looked.
It didn't look like it was just going to be another bleep pounding.
It looked like it there for a while, you know, but they somehow figured out how to ride the ship a little bit. And they've got
guts, man.
Yeah.
They have so much give a damn now. It's wonderful.
They do. That's what was the most encouraging part about it was, you know, and that goes a long ways because that builds a belief factor that you're never out of a game. No matter what's happening, you think you can come back and you think you can give yourself a chance to win or you can win the game. So that goes a long ways. I don't think they've had that for a while. You know, once they started getting pounded on pretty good, you know, they kind of...
easy to roll over.
It was, you know, because they didn't have that fight in them because of why fight? Because it's like, what's it matter? You know, but these guys started to buy in and started to play like, it's like, you know what, we're going to make some adjustments. We're going to do some things. Some things started to work. So it's like, you know, that gives them hope that they're going to be able to get back in the game, and they did. I mean, they did a lot.
Well, and the restoration of pride.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it was fleeting for a while, and then it's important, and it matters. And you had to model this for your kids a long time, and you model it now for young kids with the Divot Dogs. But go about it 1,000 miles per hour from an instance of it is important to me if you're going to do something, the do it right part.
Exactly right. You know, you have to, it's really hard. You know, it's just like golf and a lot of things. At the end of the day, the unfortunate thing is when you, like a golfer, when a golfer's done with 18 holes of golf, the first question everybody asks them is the same every time. Where did you shoot? Mm-hmm. You know, so it's like, did you win the game? Like a football game, did you win the game or not?
My response is, we're not going to talk about that.
Yeah,
I had a good time on number 11. And I enjoyed the beverages.
And it's like, you can't really, you know, it's really hard to separate the end result. You know, did you win or did you not? Did I shoot a good round or did I not? I shot 80. It's like, but really it's more important is how did you really do that? You know, because sometimes those can be very misleading. Mm-hmm. You know, you can actually have played really good, but not shot your best number. You know, so you take
kind of like going 4-8.
Kind of. It's like that team was 4-8. Is that a 4-8 team? Not many teams in the country want to play them.
Not a 4-8 finish.
Yeah. So it's like you get a little misled because it's like, well, they're 4-8. They're not very good. It's like, well, if you really watch them and what they were able to do and what they were doing, I mean, that's a pretty good team that could beat a lot of teams, you know? And so it's how did you go about doing it? So you got to get the players to buy into that. Mm-hmm. You got to get your player to not worry about the end result. What did I shoot? But more about how did you shoot it? How did you? That's pride. It's like you fight to the bitter end. You play every shot in golf to the best of your ability, right to the last putt that you have to putt out, you know? And it's like, yeah, you might not be having your best day, but on 15, if you decide just to kind of go through the motions,
don't mail it in.
Yeah, you're gonna shoot a worse score, mm-hmm. most likely. So it's like it's just as easy to compete and fight and play, you know, like you're 5 under par with 4 holes to play instead of 8 over par. So it's like you have to buy into that mentality that it's important to you. It's important to you to finish, you know, really well with what you started.
Mike Shewhart's in studio with us. He pops in every Wednesday at 4:40, Hail Varsity Radio. We talk golf. We get into a lot of topics du jour, meaning Nebraska football, Big Ten selection, who's first team, who's second team, who's third team. That's coming up on BTN around 5. Adrian Martinez, where does he land? Where's Ziggy at? Where's JD? And where's Stan find their way on the first, second, or third team? Who else for the offensive side? Nebraska basketball, we spent a lot of time on this yesterday. What a win in Clemson. They made a lot of plays. They were poised. They put a stretch together. They put a run together to go up 7. And then in typical Nebraska basketball historical fashion, they scare the hell out of you and they almost lose it.
Yeah, they made me a little nervous right there.
Right? I mean, you're just like, one minute you're happy and smiling, and the next minute you're just like screaming, you're MFing your TV because it's a 2-point game and get the ball in.
Exactly.
But they made the play. We'll come back to that. I want your take on Tiger Phil, all 22 in the desert. Pretty good stuff. Quick timeout. Hail Varsity continues, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Okay, by the media, the 2018 All Big Ten first team is out. And don't shoot or incinerate the messenger here. And Parker Gabriel tweeted this out a little bit ago. Big Ten is out. You have Rondale Moore, wide out of the year, freshman of the year. So the media, all Big Ten first team. Dwayne Haskins, Jonathan Taylor, Karan Higdon, Rondale Moore, Paris Campbell, Tyler Johnson.
No Stanley Morgan.
TJ Hawkinson, Noah Fant. Iowa goes back-to-back with their tight ends. You've got Dieter, Ben Schwegel from Wisconsin. That was horrible. DiBiase, the center. Badiaz, my bad. I was thinking Ted DiBiase, the million-dollar man. And then Isaiah Prince of Ohio State, Runyon, and Edwards. That's selected by... Oh, hold on. That's by the coaches and the media. Stanley Morgan, not first team.
That's too bad.
Yeah, and we were talking about a half hour ago, if he were to get nudged, it was going to be, well, you're up for 3 spots. Tyler Johnson, Second in the league receiving-wise, Paris Campbell. He's got some history there. What did Stanley finish last year? Was he third team? Was he second team?
I want to say second team.
I think he was second team.
Yeah. So no Stanley Morgan. Right now, Derek Peterson is breaking things in the Hale Varsity office. He'll be with us here in about 30 minutes. Real quick on Tiger, Phil. They went 22. We got it right after the Nebraska-Iowa game. It's pretty awesome to watch golf on Black Friday. What'd you think?
Yeah, pretty. I mean, it was okay. You know, I don't think it was.
They needed them like mic'd up so you could hear all of it. It was pay-per-view, so if they wanted to like get in there on each other more so than typically, it was
all right.
It felt censored.
Yeah,
a little bit.
I think they were just trying to feel it out first time.
Both probably pretty irritated about the sun going down.
Yeah. You know, and they didn't play great.
No, they didn't.
I mean, if they would have played really good, that would have been a different, you know, they, at least they had a little excitement coming down the stretch, you know, because it looked like Phil was going to shut him out on 17, and then Tiger chips it in on him. So made it a little exciting.
Yeah.
You know, but
they need more of these.
I think it's
going to grow.
It's going to grow into something. They had to figure out exactly what the format is and how it can be really something that people will tune in to watch and see, you know.
What's the feedback from numbers and revenue? Did you see or hear any of that?
Well, some of it, too, is because the pay-per-view didn't work.
See, we were at Jay Bird's house, so we were watching it there, and we all the wives wanted to go to dinner, and I'm like, are you freaking high? We just ate for a day straight.
Well, the pay-per-view didn't work, so they're refunding people's pay-per-view.
We never had any issues, but of course, we had to get down to dinner,
yeah.
So I missed the finish.
Yeah, right? I got to watch it for free because they just let you watch it on their website. The connection was kind of crappy, but
they had to do something because they couldn't get it to work.
Exactly.
So they're like, then they streamed it live, so if you wanted to watch it, anybody could watch it. So that kind of turned out to be a little bit of a fiasco.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, I think you'll see more of it. They got to figure out the right kind of format to make it super exciting for people to want to tune in. But there's a lot out there, man. You got the Patrick Reed, you know, and he's throwing guys under the bus, so it's like,
yeah, get Reed in there.
Get Reed in there.
Let's just get a celebrity death match. Forget the golf,
exactly,
throw him
right
in the boxing ring. Should we hang out if you want, bud?
I will.
Thanks for coming by.
You
and
bet,
good to chat. Brad Edwards coming up. More on the All Big Ten first team selection. Hail Varsity continues. Hour two coming up.
Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz_radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Into Hour 2, it's Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. The official results are out from the media and the coaches. Stanley Morgan, a second-team All-Big Ten wide receiver for Nebraska by the media and coaches. J.D. Spielman, a third-team wideout by media and coaches. Divino Zigbo, not a part of that third-team selection by the coaches, but the media said, Ziggy, come on down. He's a third-team member. That is a sign of nice things for Nebraska to have people on first, second, and third all-conference teams. Let's head to Bristol, say hi to ESPN Insider College Game Day. College football analyst Brad Edwards with us at JBradEdwards on Twitter. Brad, how was your holiday, bud? How were those chicken sandwiches?
Oh, it was awesome. Between the not having to eat turkey and actually being able to sit down, it was the first time this year that I have watched any NFL. I saw a good bit of the Cowboys-Redskins game, which wasn't the greatest NFL game of the year, but first time I've been able to catch any of that, too. And then got to watch a nice fight in the Egg Bowl. So
no,
what could be better than that?
You know? That's right. He got to see unsportsmanlike penalties galore in the Egg Bowl. Brad, I want to just have you put a bow on Nebraska before we get into big picture college football playoff. Nebraska lost at the buzzer against Iowa. Don't know how much of Nebraska you caught on Black Friday against Iowa, but just your overall impressions as a national guy that has to research everybody. And there was a lot of talk and hype about this Nebraska team awful start, really good finish. Where are you at with Nebraska as they head and trend into 19?
Yeah, if I go back to the summer when we were discussing this team, FPI looking at like 6-6 as the record, and kind of figured it was going to be somewhere in that range of, you know, a few swing games, and obviously they didn't all go the way that the Nebraska fans had hoped they would, and ended up a little bit worse. But you know, I still wonder if the way that it shook out didn't create more momentum than you might have gotten if it had played out the way that it was expected to go. You know, I think there was just a sense, because of the start was so bad, that maybe it felt a lot better down the stretch than it would have, you know, had everything kind of gone according to form. So, look, I go into next year expecting bigger things from Nebraska. Obviously, you would think that they would definitely be a bowl team next year. You would think that they're just going to continue to get better offensively. And I haven't really looked hard enough at the rest of the division and what everyone has coming back to assess, you know, whether I think Nebraska's a legitimate contender to make it to the conference championship game. But if they're not there next year, I would certainly expect them to be there by the year after that. That's came away with a very, very positive feeling despite the overall record not looking that good.
Brad Edwards with us, ESPN Insider, College Game Day, at @JBradEdwards on Twitter. Brad, do you have a gut feel for Jeff Brohm? Does he go home, or does he stay and continue to build with Purdue?
I think in normal circumstances, when a guy says what he said after the game on Saturday, you would think, okay, that's it, he's staying. But when it's not only the alma mater, but also the hometown, I think it's not over till it's over. And I still would lean toward him staying with Purdue. But you got to wait until, you know, all of the offers have been made, everything's on the table, and the emotion certainly becomes a factor. And that's something that wasn't necessarily in the equation on Saturday before an official offer had been made. So I would say, you know, wait and see. And until he, you know, restates that he's staying at Purdue and Louisville starts chasing someone else, then I would say that it's not 100%, but I'm still leaning toward him staying at Purdue.
What's your takeaway of what happened in Columbus on Saturday? I thought you were all over it, man. You said Ohio State. You said emphatically Ohio State. We can put together some sort of audio edit where you said Ohio State by 20. but I mean you were like, why are you asking me who's going to win? I mean, you were so confident in Ohio State, you were right. And I thought Michigan, if they're going to do it, this is the year to do it. Michigan looked scared. Ohio State looked confident. Complete shifts in how each team had presented themselves throughout the year.
Yeah, as I said, it just stunk. Like there was just, it just had a smell about it where everyone's picking Michigan, and it was just when a team as good as Ohio State is at home in a game like that and everyone's on the other side, you just figure everyone has to be wrong. But there wasn't a good X's and O's reason for it. And that was the hard part, was trying to figure out exactly how it was going to happen. And I guess it was about as surprising of a way as you could come up with, which is that Michigan defense absolutely got torched.
Yeah.
That was the hard part to see coming. Now, look, if you had told me it was going to be 35-31, I was okay, you know, especially with a special teams touchdown for the Buckeyes. I could have seen that, but I don't think anyone would have envisioned them scoring 62. And look, they left some points out on the field. I mean, they took a knee, you know, victory formation at the end of the game inside the 10. And then they had two times they got down goal to go, and they tried to get cute and put Tate Martell in there and, you know, run the ball with the quarterback and just kind of got away from what they do and ended up settling for field goals on both of those. So, I mean, it was pretty amazing, both the metamorphosis for Ohio State and the same thing for Michigan. Like, where was the team that we saw all the games before that? It was like they didn't even show up offensively until they were down so big that they pretty much were out of it. Mm-hmm. So look, I mean, we could do a whole segment on this, if not a whole show on this. You know, what does it mean for Ohio State? What does it mean for Michigan? we'll put the Michigan stuff aside and come back to that another day. I think for Ohio State, the big question is, can they do that again this week? I mean, certainly we would expect them to beat Northwestern, but can they play with that same level of motivation as they had, or was it simply a matter of it took them being an underdog in a rivalry game to inspire them to play up to that level, and now that they're a heavy favorite again against a less talented team, they're just going to go back to, you know, going through the motions and everything we saw for a lot of the first 11 games. If they do that, they're not going to be in the playoff, because I think what we saw last night from the committee, with Oklahoma one spot ahead of Ohio State and Oklahoma having a stronger opponent this weekend, Ohio State's going to have to look better than Oklahoma in order to overcome that. Now, if Oklahoma loses, I think that kind of takes care of it. But if not, Ohio State's going to have to go out there, and it might not have to be 59-0 like it was 4 years ago, but they're going to have to look impressive. They're going to have to look like a top-four team, which is something I'm not sure that they did all season long until last Saturday. So that to me is a fascinating subplot to this, is can Ohio State, in the role of the favorite, find that motivation to play at that level once again?
Brad, who do you think's better, Ohio State or Oklahoma, if they were to meet neutral site? There's recency with each program winning on the other's home field. There's recency with OU Georgia in the Final Four, and OU's defense gets lit apart. You've got the Purdue Saturday night fiasco where they got Ohio State just got drilled, and Ohio State's been drilled in their last few losses. But when you boil it down, you've seen both teams. Who do you think's better?
Yeah, so I guess the only way I could break this one down would be like this, which is to say that if I put the two side by side, let's forget about schedule, you know, all the resume items and all that, and just simply said, okay, Oklahoma has a better offense, Ohio State has a better defense, and I mean, who knows what happens with special teams, but I think the gap between the offenses is smaller than the gap between the defenses. And that it kind of feels crazy to say, given the defensive deficiencies of Ohio State this year and the number of big plays they've allowed. But they still have a lot of talent on that side of the ball. And when they're not allowing big plays, they're pretty good defensively. You know, if they're not giving up the big play, a lot of times they're getting off the field, you know, three and out, forcing a punt, whatever. So I just think Oklahoma's defense is a different level of bad. And to me, that's the difference. That's the difference between the two teams, is that Ohio State and Oklahoma are both top 10 offenses, if not both top 5 offenses, whereas Ohio State's a mediocre defense, but Oklahoma's an atrocious defense. And that's where I separate them, and I would lean toward Ohio State being the better of the two, because their defense is less bad than Oklahoma's. Now, look, I mean, is Ohio State capable of playing at a level where they could lose to Oklahoma? Absolutely. I mean, if they could lose to Purdue by 29, certainly they could get torched by Oklahoma on a given day. But laying it out the way I did, I think I would probably side with Ohio State if they were playing each other in, say, a play-in game and I had to pick one or the other.
Is Bama an absolute? I mean, Bama's in no matter what. Is that, do you get that feel?
I do. There are a couple reasons for that. One is that I cannot imagine Alabama being blown out by Georgia. They haven't lost a game by more than 14 points in 12 years under Nick Saban.
God.
So if they were to lose, you would think that it would be by a small margin. And if that's the case, and let's assume Ohio State and Oklahoma both win, what we just saw from the selection committee, you know, they looked at the Ohio State win over Michigan, and as impressive as that was, the committee told us it was only one part of the body of work. It was one game out of 12, and the other 11 for the Buckeyes still mattered. And because of what they did in the other 11, they were still ranked behind Oklahoma. Well, I think the same thing would apply if Alabama was the top four Georgia team. Sure, they have one loss against a really good team, but if you look at the other 12 games that still matter to the selection committee, that gives you a 13-game body of work for Alabama that, to me, is clearly better than the 13-game body of work for both Ohio State and Oklahoma. So, in my opinion, Alabama would be unequivocally better than both Ohio State and Oklahoma, to use the terminology that the selection committee would give. And because of that, it wouldn't matter that Ohio State and Oklahoma would be conference champions that Alabama wouldn't. Alabama would still be very clearly one of the four best teams in college football.
Brad, I want to ask you about Notre Dame. I know they're sitting back, feet up, a little rum and coke. They're enjoying themselves right now this weekend. How does Notre Dame stack up against the other teams in the conversation? Let's take Bama and let's take Clemson out. Let's talk about Georgia. Let's talk about Ohio State. Let's talk about Oklahoma. Do you feel Notre Dame's a better product, a better team than the teams that they're in front of right now?
I think it's really close between Notre Dame, Oklahoma, and Ohio State. I think those teams might split 5-5 if they play 10 games against each other. I think Georgia is very clearly better than all of them. Me, there's no question. There's no question whatsoever that Georgia's the third-best team in the country. And for that reason, I think that this game against Georgia for the SEC title is tougher for Alabama than whatever semifinal matchup they'll get if they win this game. And to me, it also creates a little bit of a quandary for the selection committee, which is they say, we hear it over and over, that they're just choosing the four best teams. All this is about is who are the four best teams. Well, if they're telling us right now that they believe Georgia is one of the four best teams, which is what they're saying by ranking them fourth, if they were to go out and lose by a field goal to an Alabama team that no one has come within 21 points of all season, in my opinion, all that is doing is reinforcing the fact that Georgia is one of the four best teams, and yet I think we all believe that in that scenario, they would penalize Georgia for taking a second loss, for not being a conference champion, and they would move both Oklahoma and Ohio State ahead of them, assuming they win conference championships this weekend. So I think there is a little bit of a contradiction there with the selection committee, them saying that they want the four best, but I think what would happen if Georgia loses a close game this weekend is they would show to us that they really don't want the four best. What they want are, well, it's somewhere in between four best and four most deserving, and that's fine. But they just need to stop saying they want the four best, because I really think they've shown in almost every year that's not what they're giving us.
Brad, I got 60 seconds. Brad Edwards, ESPN Insider, College Game Day. Why not punt Notre Dame if Ohio State's better and won a conference championship? Why not keep a two-loss Georgia if they're that talented, and they are, and they've been there before? Would the uproar and the upheaval that Notre Dame gets hosed, for lack of a better term, be too much?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, look, you've heard all the uproar over UCF not getting in as an undefeated team.
They're a different team without McKenzie, too. I mean, I don't want to hear about UCF anymore without McKenzie.
Yeah, look, but for Notre Dame to go undefeated, and look, they did beat Michigan,
sure,
who the committee still has at number 7. It's not like they didn't play anybody. You can say that for UCF. You can't say that for Notre Dame. And they've had some games where they've looked really impressive. Now, you look at who they beat after the fact, and yeah, I mean, I'm not shimming. What, Syracuse, their second-best win, I guess? That's not all that impressive. And they've had some – and you know, they had the close game against Vanderbilt, even a close game against Ball State, Pitt, USC. All of those, I think, are good reasons to maybe consider not seeding them second or third. But to leave them out, that one to me would just – that's kind of out of the question for the selection committee.
Brad, you have a great rest of your week. We'll talk next week. Thanks for the time today.
All right. Enjoyed it. Looking forward to the games.
Awesome.
Take care.
There he is, Brad Edwards, with us on Hail Varsity.
And we're back.
Fellas, you think we could listen to the radio?
On Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Yes! That's awesome.
We're just talking here. Shuey's hanging out. He loves catching up Brad Edwards, ESPN Insider, last segment. And we're just talking, why not put Georgia in? I mean, are they the fourth best team? We have a former Sooner, and he's been incredible covering Nebraska for us on Hail Varsity. Derek Peterson, Dr. Petey, is with us. Derek, we'll get into Stanley and Ziggy and Spielman and the Big Ten first and second and third team selection in a minute. who are the four best playoff teams in your eyes? You know Oklahoma well. You've seen Georgia. You've seen Ohio State. You were in Columbus. Who are your four best, man?
Obviously Alabama and Clemson.
Right. So who are the other two? I should have asked it.
The two other teams that I think deserve to get in, because like I don't think this conversation is ever about who's the best, right? Because Alabama could lose, like could have lost its last three games, and they still would have been the best team in the country, and they still would have gotten in under that metric. I think it should be, Notre Dame and Oklahoma as the last two teams in. So you've got Oklahoma playing Bama, and you've got Clemson playing Notre Dame. I just think if Oklahoma beats Texas in the Big 12 title game, then the one loss that they had on their schedule, they turned around and beat and avenged, I guess, so to speak. And then you've got, obviously, Notre Dame going undefeated. I think, you know, I was riding Central Florida bandwagon for a long time because I think wins should matter. That's the whole point. Like, you can only play who's on your schedule. And, you know, teams are setting these schedules like 6 and 7 years in advance. Not like you're going to be able to forecast who's going to be an elite team in, you know, 8 years down the road. Wins should matter. I don't think Central Florida. I think if they go undefeated, there's an argument. I think if they went undefeated and still had Mackenzie Milton, mm-hmm. put him in, 100% put him in. But I think it should end up being, as long as Oklahoma takes care of business in the Big 12 title game, I think it should end up being Notre Dame and Oklahoma is the last two to get in.
See, and I think Ohio State is better than Oklahoma as you hang up. But I think Oklahoma could be right there with Notre Dame. That's the triangle I'm confused about. Oklahoma, Notre Dame, Ohio State. Clemson and Bama, boom, golden. Georgia's really good. Georgia got smoked by LSU. LSU has three losses, albeit the loss they just recently suffered had more points than the LSU A&M basketball game will have. So, I mean, I get it. Do you expand?
I'm not convinced Ohio State's a better team, though.
But, man, I think they are. I think they are. I know they've been up and down. I know they've looked like they don't give a damn. Part of my evil master plot for wanting Ohio State to get in is for St. Nick to send Urban out a second time. I mean, I want to see Bama absolutely dismantle Ohio State.
Well, that would be something.
Right,
I mean, wouldn't
America feel good about that, though? I mean, come on.
Yeah, probably. I think Oklahoma would. Oklahoma's offense would stand a better shot of matching Alabama's defense.
I agree with you there.
They just have so many issues, and taking that one game against Michigan, a team and a coach that Urban Meyer has just like owned real estate on for however many years now.
Explain Texas to me.
So much from that.
Explain Texas to me, and explain Texas losing to Maryland to me. That's kind of my reaction to OU. It'd be nice to have a second crack at the team that did you in. I mean, Nebraska, I go back to the 99 season, Nebraska was one of the best team in the country. They didn't get a crack at Florida State. It was Mike Vick and Virginia Tech who was unbeaten because Texas upset Nebraska in October. Nebraska drilled Major Applewhite and company in the Big 12 title game, but that kept Nebraska out.
Yeah. Not to get off track, but I'm seeing on Twitter, it looks like Jeff Brohm is staying at Purdue.
Thank you for coming there.
That's great
for the Big Ten West, and that tells you just what type of dumpster fire Louisville is. You can't go home. Think about it. Patino in his white suit lawsuit. Coach Harley is no longer awesome anymore because Lamar's gone. Papa John is shunned. I mean, I'm not going to Louisville. I'm sorry. I won't even fly in there.
Especially not when you've got the reigning Big Ten Freshman of the Year and the Big Ten Receiver of the Year, and Rondale Moore coming back for at least two more seasons.
Oh, he's awesome. Okay, let's talk Big Ten and Nebraska. Stanley, second team, hose job or right call?
I don't think any of these were the correct call, man. Like, I think
Like, see, when what, you look at this
with
stuff,
with Adrian too as freshman?
Oh, 100%.
Okay.
Yes. I'm not saying he should have won freshman of the year over Rondale Moore. Rondale Moore was had one of the most productive seasons, not just of freshman, but of any receiver in the country. I'm fine with him getting freshman of the year. I'm talking about strictly Trace McSorley being a second-team quarterback. Get out of here with that. Like this was a popularity contest that looked at team success over individual success. I just put out a tweet. Martinez, in terms of passing, had better numbers than McSorley across the board. Mm-hmm. The turnovers... He had more turnovers than McSorley. I think Nebraska, and you know, I was a little surprised with this yesterday, going back to Mo Berry by the coaches not getting at least a third team nod. I thought that was absurd, mm-hmm. especially from coaches, because it's clear to see how much he means to them. He had 100 tackles on the season after 44 coming into the year on his career. He was everywhere, finished second in the conference in tackles. And he doesn't get a third team nod? Are you kidding me? And then you've got Stanley Morgan Jr., who sets program records for receiving yards in back-to-back seasons, leaves Nebraska as maybe the all-time leader in everything, mm-hmm. and had a 1,000-yard season, had better numbers than Paris Campbell across the board, and he gets second team nod. I just think Nebraska's lack of team success and the wins is what hurt them in this. And I mean, it shouldn't be a surprise because these are always popularity contests. And you see Michigan, Ohio State, Penn State all up and down the lists when you look at them. And that's typically the way it is. The teams with the most wins are going to get there. But, I mean, it's frustrating if you're a Nebraska fan because I think – and I mean, just a fan of those kids in general because I think Adrian definitely deserved – at least a third team nod. I mean,
well,
come on.
Stanley
definitely deserved first team.
Yeah, no, I could make a case. Stanley is, I mean, he was third in yards behind the kid out of Minnesota. But I think he was first team worthy on one of either media or coaches. Ziggy didn't get third team. And you look at the running backs listed here with Jonathan Taylor. Yes. You have Sanders for Penn State and Higdon and Scott at Indiana and in Corbin, Illinois. Ziggy, I'm glad he got a third team. J.D. Spielman, third team on coaches and media. Do you have a reaction to that? I mean, if you were to get a drink in front of a coach and sit down with them in a dark room where there's no cameras or Twitter or recorders, they probably don't want to see J.D. in the slot against their corner or nickelback, do they?
No one does. I mean, if he doesn't miss the last two games, he has a puncher's chance at 1,000 yards this year, too. Mm-hmm. Imagine if Nebraska had 2,000-yard receivers, what that would have made this look like. Ziggy did get third team. He got voted there by the media.
No, I know, but I'm saying Ziggy, you're right, we've kind of threw this out there. Ziggy's absolutely a top three back in this league, first, second, third. I could make an argument from an MVP standpoint, his value and the yards he got and the plays he made. You can make a push for second team. I think Jonathan Taylor and Higdon are your 1-2 punch, but beyond that, I don't think there's a better back in the league than Ziggy.
No, I'm curious, and Ziggy is probably going to be the case study for this. I'm curious with this offense moving forward, if we're going to get a ton of situations like this where you've got a guy like Divine Ozigbo, but because you know Nebraska had a guy in Greg Bell to start the season, and Nebraska had Maurice Washington and other guys that they want to get the ball to. I'm curious if kind of that like share the ball around mentality hurts these guys when it comes to this situation. Because look at the wide receiver core across the league. Is there a guy that you would pick over Stanley Morgan Jr. if you were building a team? I don't think there's one. Is there a guy that you would want in the slot, maybe outside of Rondale Moore, that you would pick over J.D. Spielman? Maybe two guys?
I think
a running back?
The guy I pick over Stanley and the guy I pick over J.D. is Rondale, period. That's about it.
You can put Paris Campbell on that consideration as well,
okay.
I'd say.
Danny off the top rope. Paris pretty good, absolutely. He's good, but I mean, there's that argument. Remind me here, is JD a redshirt sophomore?
Redshirt sophomore, yep. He's eligible to leave.
He is eligible to leave. That's where I'm going. Does Nebraska lose Lamar Jackson and JD Spielman? What's your gut say?
My gut on JD, like, I think the guys are going to test it out. I think they're going to try to see what kind of grades they can get. And rightfully so, that's the smart play to make. Both of them could 100% benefit from coming back. Lamar
two seasons with Travis Fisher would do him wonders.
Yeah.
I think my gut, and this is speculation, I don't know. My gut honestly feels like JD might be at risk of leaving, maybe. Like, because I say that because let's say he puts his name in there. We might have already talked about this on a radio show, I think, but let's say he puts his name in there. Someone gives him back a third round grade.
Mm-hmm.
He's not going much higher than that, is he?
I don't know. I mean, and let's be straight. He's going to get the best advice there is from dad.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. And that was another thing. His dad has been at every single game this season. I don't think his dad was at every game last year.
No.
He's going to be able to tell him because the type of receiver that JD is, it's all the rage in the NFL right now. Wow. If you can get one of those guys, like you want one of those guys. And he's a sure-handed catcher.
It reminds you of what's going on in Kansas City, period.
Yeah, yeah.
With Hill.
I don't know. It would suck if they lost him. It'd be real, real bad if they lost Stanley and JD both in the same season. I think him coming back, the benefit that he would have of coming back, learning more, continuing to grow, having an even bigger season, maybe he bumps into the second round.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, but I just look at, I don't think he's ever going to be a first round guy.
No.
Maybe second or
look
third
at, look
round.
Look at Curtis Samuel. Look what he's doing with for the Panthers, the hybrid out of Ohio State. He's really flourishing now, and he was a second round guy. So we'll see. Derek, I got 20 seconds. What are you working on for Hail Varsity, bud?
We're doing some season review stuff. We're going to be grading some position groups. So that's what I'm working on. And then we're going to be taking some deep dives into game film and looking at formations and things like that.
Dude, you're awesome. This was a fun chat. Thanks for jumping on.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Take care. All right, brother. There he is. Next time we'll talk about his Thunder. Derek Peterson, Dr. Petey at Dr. Petey HV.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Back with you, it's Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Time for a Jock Doc Wednesday, Lincoln Orthopedic Center. Dr. Doug Tavis is with us. Dr. Doug, hope you had a great Thanksgiving. I think you and I both got Christian McCaffrey this weekend in fantasy, didn't we?
Well, I tell you what, the guy played lights out, and, kudos to him. Beat me up, but kudos to him.
Yeah, we got rolled by him, too. I'm having an off season. This is an injury that makes the hair on the back of your neck stand up. We talked about Alex Smith last week, and everyone became a Central Florida fan last year with Coach Frost and loved watching McKenzie Milton. McKenzie Milton injured and carted off, and yesterday was able to get blood flow resumed to that right knee, that right leg. Dr. Doug, what happened with McKenzie Milton in your estimation, and take us through just kind of the on the field and then the path ahead for a great kid and an incredible quarterback.
Yeah, you know, you just hate to see this injury. It's incredibly tough to come back from, and we just pray that McKenzie can get through this thing well. Basically, what happened is he had a knee dislocation, and we've talked about this before, when Teddy Bridgewater had his injury. But with a knee dislocation, what happens is the ligaments that surround the knee, three of those ligaments are going to give way, maybe all four of them, the collateral ligaments, the ACL and the PCL. And when all four of them or three of the four give way, what happens is that the leg bone separates from the thigh bone through the knee joint.
Mm.
And as a result of that, then the just like if you've seen somebody who has a finger dislocation where it stays out of joint until somebody can put it back in, that's the situation with a knee dislocation. And while that knee dislocation is out of joint, the blood flow going down to the leg is potentially very compromised, if not completely shut off. And so when you started hearing reports that he was going to surgery immediately because of blood flow issues, that's the concern that was going on there.
Dr. Doug Davis with us, Lincoln Orthopedic Center, a Jock Doc Wednesday. We're talking Mackenzie Milton's injury. So what's the timeline to get treatment to a Milton or a Bridgewater and then get them into surgery without losing the leg? That's because that's what was talked about with Bridgewater, how close that he was to losing his leg. It's the same situation with Mackenzie with no blood flow. Dr. Doug, what's that shot clock like?
Yeah, so ultimately, you know, if I'm on the field and I have one of these injuries, I will make one attempt at a reduction of that knee to get it put back into place. Because if I can get it put back into place, then if the blood flow is stopped just because of the malposition of the leg, you know, then you can restore it basically immediately. But if you can't, then you've got to get them under anesthesia. And you want to do that and get the blood flow restored within a couple of hours. If we use a tourniquet, for instance, in surgery to restrict blood flow so that we can do our surgery without seeing so much bleeding, we'll limit that to 2 hours as a maximum. And so if we can do it within 2 hours, we shouldn't have any problem with the muscle or the tissue where the blood flow was inhibited. Beyond 2 hours, then we get into a situation where there can be death of the tissue because of loss of oxygen, and we can get into a situation where when the blood flow is restored, that the tissue has undergone some damage, it begins to swell, and then we get into another scenario called a compartment syndrome. Mm-hmm. When the blood flow is reestablished to the leg, and then that can create problems with the tissue getting oxygenated as well. So in both of these cases, when you know, we talked about Bridgewater and we talked here about Milton, that's the issue of regaining that blood flow as quickly as possible to preserve the tissues that require that oxygen to get to them below the knee.
Dr. Doug Davis is with us, Lincoln Orthopedic Center, a Jock Doc Wednesday. We're talking Mackenzie Milton's injury. Dr. Doug, the surgery was performed, and what's following the first surgery? Is there more than one surgery that needs to happen? What's the road to recovery look like?
Yeah, so in this particular situation, the extent of the surgery, I couldn't begin to tell you. You know, it could be something as simple as just getting them under anesthesia, reducing the deformity of the leg, and stabilizing it, and the blood flow restores. Sometimes you actually have to go in, and if the artery is torn as a result of the injury, you got to physically have that sewn back together. Sometimes there's just what we call a flap tear inside of the artery, and what you need to do in a situation like that is to maybe put a stent in like you do a cardiac stent. So that's kind of that first stage. The second stages depend on the conglomeration of the injuries. Remember, we said there's at least three ligaments damaged in a situation like this. The ACL, in just looking at his leg, I think it was probably the ACL, the lateral collateral ligament, the medial collateral ligament would be my guess. But those ligaments are all going to have to be reconstructed as time goes along. And then the last thing that's reported here with Mackenzie is that he had a nerve injury, and the nerve that goes down the side of the leg is the one that usually gets damaged. In my experience with nerve injuries with this, there's a very good likelihood of that nerve coming back because they said that the nerve was not separated. Obviously, they did some studies or looked at the nerve at the time of his injury, and they can tell that the nerve is intact, but it's been damaged internally, and it's just going to take time for that to come back.
How big a miracle is it that a guy like Bridgewater is he's with the Saints, but he's playing again? And we have followed Mackenzie's career, and all things point to the same type of determination. People are different, I get, but it's a miracle to walk again after this thing, let alone throw a football again, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those scenarios where I hate to see this injury because it's one of those that you can go through a lot of surgical intervention and still not have the stability of the knee that you really need to have in order to play that kind of game. But you also, you know, have those scenarios where they can come back, and I'm, you know, grateful to be on, you know, this end of history because, you know, when a Joe Namath was playing, we didn't understand, you know, how to fix those kinds of injuries. You know, that was a knee that was going to get thrown into a cast for 8 weeks, and you just kind of hope that everything heals in, and then you brace it after that. You know, that was kind of the treatment back then. So I'm glad to be on this end of history where we've got some of these things figured out.
Dr. Doug, thanks for the time tonight.
You bet, Chris. Thank you.
Now live from the ESPN Lincoln Studios, it's Hail Varsity.
I know what that means.
With Chris Schmidt and Danny Burke.
That was a lot of fun today. Missed the show? Get to the podcast, hailvarsity.com or iTunes. Also, the in-demand, some of the interviews we talked with Brad Edwards of ESPN, Derek Peterson, Hail Varsity. Hear all of those. We had a lot of fun talking all conference selections, who got hosed, what was right on. And also that talk with Derek about who may be looking at the NFL draft from the Nebraska football team. So we went there, also kicked the show off talking about guys that can make a monster jump in 2019. Danny, any gut feels here on the ACC Big Ten Challenge? Coach Brett needs some winners.
I think I like North Carolina covering against Michigan tonight.
Okay.
I believe it's at 3.5.
You were right on with Louisville.
Yeah, I think I went.
Won outright.
I think I went 3 for 3 last night. Iowa hosed us. who else? Crap, I can't remember.
Indiana got rocked.
Yeah, but we said Duke would win.
We said Duke would win, and it was going to be. I thought it was around.
We said by like 17.
17. It ended up being what, like 22.
Yeah, so they covered. I don't know, but we went 3 for 3, I remember. I think it was mostly the dogs covering. But, yeah, I think I like North Carolina tonight and probably the over in that game.
Okay. All right. Reminder to you to buckle up. Something's got to stop that motion, and airbags aren't enough. And what I'm talking about is when you get in that accident, the seatbelt or the windshield. It's a real easy choice to choose the seatbelt to stop your forward motion and prevent excessive injury. Whether it's the driver's seat, the passenger seat, or the back seat, click it or ticket, buckle up now. A message from the Nebraska Department of Highway Safety Office. Holiday Hail Mary. Let's get you qualified. Caller 8, caller 9. That giveaway is the 14th. A laptop, a gift card to Misty's, a gift card to Jet Splash, and how about a coffee collection. Can log on ESPN. Lincoln, caller 8, caller 9 qualifies now.
Hey!
Three-man rush.
What's this, lying around?
All kinds of time.
It's the season to be merry.
Depths into the throw, in the wind.
Nipply out. I mean nippy out.
Down to the goal line!
We're gonna have the happiest Christmas since Bing Crosby tap dance with Danny Kaye.
Caught!
Ho, ho, ho.
Touchdown!
All right, caller 8 and 9 qualifies. We are loaded up tomorrow. We are going to have a recruiting launch with Greg Smith, Gary Barnett. We'll get his take on the college football playoff, on his favorite son, Pat Fitzgerald versus Urban Meyer. And our dear friend Parker Gabriel, Lincoln Journal Star, going to join us. We are out to Uncle Jerry DiNardo. We'll see if that's a Thursday or a Friday thing. But a lot of great football yet to talk. And we're excited for it. Caller 8, caller 9 qualifies right now. 466-3776, 800-825-5865. What are you doing tonight, Danny?
I think I'm just keeping it low-key, watching some of my bets, hopefully watching some winners. But besides that, just hanging out. Got a workout in earlier, so I'll be chilling. What about you? You hitting Madonna Proactive, getting some laps or
I
what?
I might do that tonight. I'm going to have to negotiate that from... going to pick Junior up.
Yeah. Any special dinner plans?
That's the other thing. Do I go eat or do I go work out or do I go pick my kid up?
So you got to work.
I've got three doors that I don't want to do any of them.
So, you know, you work out, you pick up the food on the way home, and I don't know about Junior. Yeah. Well, I don't know what time you have to pick him up. So
yeah, it's a fluid situation. Caller 8 and 9, Danny will get that handled. And we'll be back at you tomorrow, 4 o'clock. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for spending time with Hail Varsity Radio. Danny Burke, Chris Schmidt. Talk to you tomorrow. Be good.